You are listening to the Zen Nova Scotia podcast with talks by Cone Franz. These talks are made possible in part by generous donations from our listeners. To find out how to support and take part in our community, visit zennovascotia.com.
A few months ago, someone asked me to write a short article that explained what Zen was. I think I was given like 250 words. And that's hard. But I resorted instantly to the same thing that almost everyone does, which is this little verse that's attributed to Bodhidharma that we often fall back on as the definition of Zen. But a couple of things. One, he didn't say it, thanks to modern scholarship, we can see that the first appearance of this phrase actually appears about 600 years after Bodhidharma, from what I understand. So we really missed the boat on that. But it's still really, it feels good. And the fact that we got that part wrong doesn't change the fact that there's still more than 800 years of people pointing to this and saying, this is it, which is a pretty good long time. It's maybe worth unpacking a little bit. Here's how it reads, though it's, I don't know if this is the best or most elegant translation. This is describing Zen. A special transmission outside the scriptures, not founded upon words and letters. By pointing directly to one's mind, it lets one see into one's own true nature and thus attain Buddhahood. This gets quoted a lot, and it's, we could acknowledge from the beginning, it's just really good marketing. I think that a thing that's marketed well is not marketed to everybody. It's marketed skillfully to that audience that wants it. And there's a certain kind of person that really perks up when they hear that there's a secret. That same kind of person, when they hear that there's a secret, wants to be one of the people who knows the secret. Right? So this sounds kind of exciting. It also, in the way that good marketing does, subtly manages to slam the competition. Right? Because almost everything, especially in the Mahayana world at that point, rested very heavily on scripture. It was, you know, there were traditions that were coming to rely very heavily on the Lotus Sutra, for example, or various texts. And Bodhidharma even came carrying over the Lankavatara Sutra. And there are, you kind of identified with a text as part of identifying with your school. And this very quickly and subtly dispatches with the whole idea of that and says, yeah, you can study that as much as you want. You still don't know the secret. There's a secret that we get. A special transmission outside the scriptures, not founded upon words and letters. So it goes beyond. It's not just that this isn't about the sutras. It's that this isn't about language, which I can tell you appealed to me greatly when I first encountered this and when I first encountered Zen. The idea is that that direct experience is primary. A direct experience of what? Obviously, if I could say it, the whole thing would fall apart. But direct experience of something, right? And so we have all these analogies of, well, I'll give you one from today. Someone at work today, they brought in a cake they had made. It was a rose and matcha cake. And it was great because everybody saw it and everybody, I think, has an idea of what that's going to taste like. But maybe you've never had that. Most people have probably never had that. And if you stood around the table and you just watched people try it, you could watch, there was a club that formed, right? Because in the beginning, nobody knows the taste. And then one person who tastes it, now they know a secret. And all it takes is for one other person to try it. And then that person knows. And now the two of you know something. You can't describe it. You could try. You could have an awkward conversation around how it's kind of bitter or it's kind of... But if somebody came along and they said, I really want to know what this tastes like, you wouldn't even try to talk to them about it, right? You'd say, here, try this. And now there's a third person in the club. And people have been talking this way for centuries. Before I go on to the next part, I just want to linger for a minute around this word transmission. There's the transmission that's being referred to here, and then there's a kind of institutional transmission, which we often conflate with this. So a person who has trained and is recognized as a full priest is someone who has received Dharma transmission. And if you're like me, and I think many people are because this is just a very natural direction to go, when you hear something like this, when you hear about this wordless transmission and you read these stories about teacher and student, you get the idea that there's something that happens between two people, that at the moment of the teacher's choosing, something is given to a student. And in that moment, the student understands something that previously they didn't. It's like pulling something out of your own mind and putting it onto someone else's. It's a really beautiful idea. And again, in the same way as the secret, it's very seductive, right? Because you want that. Someone could make a very strong argument, and some people have, that Zen as a system of training is a kind of trick or a kind of bait and switch. That in the case of Soto Zen, where we have this talk of transmission, and in the koan traditions, where there are these actual koans with answers, maybe even more, that there's something out there, some thing to go after, to pursue, right? It's the carrot, and you commit based on your belief that that is there, which can be very skillful, maybe. It can drive someone. And what happens is you chase the carrot and you chase the carrot and you chase the carrot, and then you realize, oh, there was never any carrot. The whole thing was a trick, which I'll talk more about in a minute. That can be a very skillful or even generous way of pulling someone along. But there's a danger in it, which is that sometimes, if you're invested enough, if the chase is thorough enough, you may not realize at the end that there was no carrot. And your teacher may not realize that you didn't realize that there was no carrot. Maybe the teacher didn't realize there was no carrot. And then you move into this kind of play acting where the teacher imagines that she is reaching into her mind and bestowing something on yours. And you imagine that you're receiving this. And now you imagine that you're in a position to pull something from your mind and bestow it on someone else. And I mention this because it has happened a lot, not just throughout history, but today. There are a lot of people who think something happened and now think that they're going to make something happen. But what really happens in this institutional transmission is in the Tibetan tradition, people refer to empowerments a lot. It's an empowerment. It's a ceremony in which a person is... All day I thought about how to describe this. It's kind of like being told it's okay now to take off your training wheels. And the analogy that I have in my mind is a wedding. You know, I would tell anyone who's getting married, don't get married unless you're already kind of married. Right? You should be married in most ways. That commitment should be real already. You shouldn't wait until your wedding day to find that commitment or to find that love or to find that sense of responsibility toward the other person. Get that in place. And then the wedding can be a formality. But the fact is that a wedding also has a kind of power, right? It takes all those things that are already present and it ties them up in a really interesting way, sometimes in ways that you don't see coming. And you maybe find that you wake up the next day and the way you relate to each other has changed a little bit. There's something unconscious, there's something new to work with. And there's a sense now that whereas yesterday you could have gotten out of this fairly easily, now it's actually easier to keep going forward than to try to go back. In the same way with this institutional transmission, nothing should happen in transmission that hasn't already fully been established. Whatever that is between teacher and student. But in saying that, I don't want to deny that there's a kind of power to that as well, that it seals something and it sets someone on a path where, again, it's easier for them to keep going than to step out. It's not a big deal, but it's kind of a big deal. But it's not a big deal. The second part of this verse reads, by pointing directly to one's mind, it lets one see into one's own true nature and thus attain Buddhahood. And in the translation I have, there are parts in brackets that suggest that some liberty is taken. So if you take the brackets out, it reads, by pointing directly to mind, it lets one see into nature and thus attain Buddhahood. It takes out some of the personal element of that, which is probably a little more accurate. Here, what many people take from this part, and the transmission part, I guess, is that this whole thing doesn't work without a teacher. Because someone has to point, right? You go to the teacher and the teacher points out mind. Probably over and over and over again. And a good teacher does, but it doesn't quite say that. It doesn't quite say that a teacher does that. It says Zen does that. It lets one see into nature, or one's nature, and attain Buddhahood. And here, too, we get a line that is commonly misunderstood. Because on the surface, when we read this, we imagine that someone's going to point us at something, and then we're going to see something that we hadn't seen about ourselves, and that's going to set off a kind of chain reaction, a kind of chemical response in the mind, and that is going to lead to an awakening. And so there's this chain of causality, right? You show up and there's a teacher and the teacher says something and that points to something and you look for that thing and then you notice that thing, and in seeing that thing, that wakes up another thing and the whole thing falls apart and Buddha. Which again, if you're me and you're 17 years old, sounds like the best thing in the world. But that isn't what's being said. It says, by pointing directly to mind, it lets one see the reality of things and wake up. Right. So the whole time, the only thing to see is what's already there. And what's already there is Buddhahood. In Shobo Genzo, Dogen talks about, in Zenki, and I was just writing about this the other day, you know, his famous example is he talks about how it's like a person in their sleep reaching for a pillow in the night. And what I love about that image, of course, is that it sounds like an image of grasping, right? Like you want that. But it's someone who knows completely that it's there, right? It's not this. It's not scrambling for the pillow. That's a totally different thing. It's that you slid off the pillow and then you just reach up and you grab it. You know exactly where it is. You've always known exactly where it is. It's the most natural thing in the world. It's like scratching your nose. You know exactly where your nose is. Bet all of you do. You don't have to think about it at all. You don't have to question it at all. You don't have to examine it at all. It's so obvious to you that it wouldn't occur to you to imagine not knowing. Right? So when you have a little itch, you just scratch it and you keep doing whatever you're doing. It's so easy. That's what's being pointed at here. It's looking at something that is obvious. Not looking at something obscured, not looking at something that's secret, not looking at something that only another person knows where it is and they have to show you. It's just noticing, oh, I have a nose on my face. I always had a nose on my face. I've spent some time recently just staring at this verse, and I guess what I'll say about it is that I think it's in equal parts brilliant, because it's actually quite honest, and dangerous, because no matter how honest it is, we aren't going to read it in the way that it's offered. We're going to read it in terms of what we want it to say. That there is something special and there is something hidden. And there is an elite core of people or an elite category of person who will find it. And if you can find one of those elite people, you might become one of those elite people. But in fact, you already know where your nose is. You're fine. And that's where I'll stop.
For more information about Zen, our practice, and how you can support and take part in our community, please visit zennovascotia.com.